little ditty about Jack and Diane, two American kids growing up in the heartland. Sometimes love don't feel like it should, baby. Hurts so good.
But then after American Fool was number one, all I was concerned with on was not to repeat. I didn't want to repeat. I didn't want to make American Fool 2. I knew that that would be a big problem, so I just went somewhere else. I just went to a different type of songwriting and a different sensibility about making records, and I still kept the trashy sound, but just moved on.
All my friends are in a small town. My parents live in the same small town.
The funniest thing to me is that people think I'm the keeper of the small town. You know what I'm saying? Well, you really championed small towns and across America. I wrote one song.
Little big house, man. Ooh, yeah.
Hi, this is John Mellencamp, and you're in the studio.
John Mellencamp grew up in a small town called Seymour, Indiana, about 100 miles south of Indianapolis. It was a tough little town, and by all accounts, John Mellencamp was a tough little kid. He had his share of small town trouble, everything from smoking cigarettes in the high school locker room to the usual quota of pool hall fistfights. He was, in the classic James Dean sense, a rebel without a cause, gripped by the kind of adolescent anger that some people never outgrow. But Mellencamp managed to find a kind of salvation. He found it on the radio, and John found it on the wrong side of Seymour's tracks. Mellencamp found it in the music of James Brown and the music of the Rolling Stones. John Mellencamp found it in rock and roll. For John Mellencamp, salvation was in the shape of a guitar. At the age of 16, of course, he didn't realize that.
Initially, unless you're just a musician's musician, most guys pick up a guitar because they want to meet girls. I mean, let's face it. I mean, that's how it all starts, isn't it? I mean, in the 60s, you could have a guitar with you and not even know how to play it, and girls would come up and talk to you. So that was, you know, that was basically how the whole thing really started. And then you found out, hey, you could make $20 a weekend playing in bars or at college fraternities. And then, and at one point, you know, you either say, well, this was fun for a while, now I got to get on with a correct job, or else you just keep pursuing that. And I just kept pursuing that. And then, of course, you know, all the reasons you start doing stuff is never the reason you keep doing it. So the reason I kept playing guitar and kept writing songs very rarely has to do with girls anymore if you just listen to the songs.
The first hit from John Mellencamp, 1979's I Need a Lover, which appeared on his third album entitled Johnny Cougar. Mellencamp had been blindsided by his English manager, Tony DeFries, when John initially was presented with the album cover of his first album and was shocked to find that DeFries had changed John's last name.
I thought all the DJs were handsome, and I thought that the young kids ran the record company, and I thought rock and roll was for kids, and I thought kids ran it, and I thought everything was, that's the way it was. If you made a record, it was on the radio. So, you know, when the guy gave me the album jacket, some English guy, you know, the only reason he signed me in the first place was because he thought I was an American, and I didn't want to tell him that, well, just walk outside your door, man. This country's full of Americans. You know, I just saw, he put it on the album cover, and I had no control on, you know, back then I had no control. At 22 years old, you don't control anything, you know. So that's how it happened, and it was like, well, either you do it or else there's no record. So I just did it. Seems silly now, doesn't it?
Number 2 hit, Hurt So Good, from the 1982 breakthrough album American Fool. That fifth album, recorded in 3 studios on 2 continents, not only broke Mellencamp's career wide open, it also influenced the sound of 80s rock and roll.
Well, American Fool was a very tedious, hard record to make because we were trying to do something different in the studio sonically. You know, back then, if you remember records, there were very few records that had like a live drum sound on them. Everything was all, they used to use drum booths and all kind of stuff like that, you know, and everything was very tame and very polite. So we didn't really know how to do it. We knew what we wanted to do. We just didn't know how to do it. We couldn't find any engineers that were open to doing it. Well, no, that's not the way the Eagles make records. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the Eagles were huge back then, and they had a very polite sound, and, you know, they were an American band. And we wanted to make a record that sounded like it was made in the garage.
As the album climbed steadily toward the top of the sales chart, driven by radio hits and a couple of popular videos on the emerging MTV, John Mellencamp found that after 5 albums and countless club and opening act gigs, success had its own set of challenges.
I had this English manager who I wasn't getting along with at all, you know, because after the record became number one, he was, you know, this was blue chip time for him. Okay, let's sell out, John. Let's endorse Ant and Roach Killer, whatever we can do to make a buck. And I was like, no. So I was constantly fighting with this guy about things that he may want to, you know, that he wanted me to do. Well, let's see if we can buy John off. Okay, here's a new car. Here's a nice dinner. You know, here's all these parties and stuff we want you to come to. You know, come to this party so you can meet this guy so he can try to talk you into putting one of your songs in some B movie. You know, which was this guy's way that he wanted to exploit me.
little ditty about Jack and Diane, two American kids growing up in the heartland. Jackie gonna be a football star, Diane's debutante backseat of Jackie's car. Sucking on chili dog, outside taste freeze. Diane sitting on Jackie's lap, got his hands between the knees. Jackie say, hey Diane, let's run off behind the shady trees. Dribble off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please. Say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. Say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. They walk on. Flexes thoughts for the moment, scratches his head and does his best James Dean. Well, then there and Diane gotta run off to city. Diane says, baby, you ain't missing nothing. Jackie say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. So let it rock, let it roll. Let the Bible belt come and save my soul. Holding on to 16 as long as you can. Changes come around real soon, make us women. Kids doing best they can.
His first number one hit, John Mellencamp with Jack and Diane from the American Fool album in 1982. Next, John Cougar leverages his success to reclaim his surname. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for Words and Music, the best of John Mellencamp, part one.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is John Mellencamp.
For part one of his Words and Music anthology, I'm Redbeard. And after five albums of struggle, John Mellencamp had developed a successful sound on American Fool, but he was careful not to make it a formula.
But then after American Fool was number one, all I was concerned with on was not to repeat. I didn't want to repeat. I didn't want to make American Fool 2. I knew that that would be a big problem, so I just went somewhere else. I just went to a different type of songwriting and a different sensibility about making records, and I still kept the trashy sound, but just moved on to somewhere else. You know, I think that's the worst thing in the world to do, is have a hit record, you know, for me or for anybody, and then repeat, and then make another record that sounds just like the hit record. And it's kind of like, well, you know, okay, we've heard that. I think Uh-Huh was a lot better record, trying to be a better record than American Fool, simply because it was the beginning of me becoming focused on what I think I now do. See, like, that was really the beginning for me as a songwriter. All the rest of the records were me trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Took me a long time, didn't it? Five albums or something.
There's a woman in the kitchen cleaning up the evening slime, and he looks at her and says, "Hey, darling, I can remember when you could stop a cloud. Oh, but ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America something to see, baby? Ain't that America home of the free? Little pink houses for you and me. Oh yeah, you and me." Well, there's a young man in a t-shirt, a list to a rock and roll station. He's got a greasy hair, greasy smile. He says, "Lord, this must be my destination. Just like everything else, those old crazy dreams just kinda came away." Oh, ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America something to see, baby? Ain't that America home of the free? Yeah, little pink houses for you.
Mellencamp was not yet known as a balladeer, but that doesn't mean he wasn't writing them.
Back then, I didn't really want to get too far away from Boom Boom Crack. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really feel like that anybody wanted to hear me sing a slow song. A lot of times, you know, I would write slow songs and then take them to the band and we would rework them so that they were rock and roll songs. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. Like Jack and Diane initially was like a real slow song. But then so we added some guitars and stuff like that and it became something else.
That's John Mellencamp, who released the 1983 album Aha as John Cougar Mellencamp, finally recording under his legal surname with the top 10 hit Pink Houses. One of the more transparent songs lyrically on Aha is the Authority song.
I don't really subscribe to this life of luxury. I mean, great if people have got it and they dig it, good, go for it, you know. But for me, going to the rock concert with a bunch of guys in a car was always more fun than getting to the rock concert, where all of a sudden you have to sit down and shut up, you know, and no smoking and no drinking and, you know, no throwing up, you know. Oh, well, I was throwing up a minute ago in my car. I can't throw up in this place, you know. I always liked the ride there better because when you got there, all of a sudden there was all these damn rules you had to subscribe to and follow. I'm still the same way. I don't like rules, particularly when they don't make any sense. There are some rules that are very proper and correct, but, you know, rules like no smoking. Well, let me see. This floor is made out of concrete, and this chair I'm sitting on steel. The only thing I can set on fire is myself, and I'm not going to do that. You know, if I can't make sense out of a rule, then it just, you know, I'm kind of think that the law was meant to be interpreted in a lenient fashion. Sometimes I learn to lean to this side, sometimes I lean to that side, right?
Got you.
but it was 1983's blue-collar anthem Pink Houses which elevated John Mellencamp from popular singer to important songwriter.
Let's face it, I'm just a song and dance man. You know, I'm just here to entertain you. I don't know what it is, but for some reason people think that, you know, guys in bands should be stupid. And, you know, I've always hated that. But then the minute that they find out you're not, that you will approach other topics than ooh, baby, ooh, baby, then all of a sudden they expect you to justify everything you say and have your reason why. And a lot of times, man, I mean, you know, you just believe things sometimes because you believe them. You know, I believe this to be true, whatever. And you may find out it's not true. You may find out it is true. But at a point in your life, I mean, even as we said here today, you believe stuff that you really can't validate, and so do I. Call it faith, call it whatever. But the minute, you know, you start writing songs, you got some guy going, what took you so long to get around to this? Well, I didn't know it was my job. You know, hell, I thought I was playing in a bar 3 weeks ago, and I was doing okay doing Satisfaction by the Stones. You know, what's so political about that? I mean, you may have family, and you may have a girlfriend, and you may have a boyfriend, and you may have a job. But, you know, we live inside our heads, which is what Crumbling Down is talking about. Pretty much you're out here by yourself ultimately and finally, I mean, I hate to say this, but I think it's true, the only helping hand we get is the hand that when they lower you down in the box, that's when they help you. They help you when it's over, you know, when they put you in your grave is what I'm saying. And I know that sounds awful, but pretty much, you know, I mean, these old cliches have been around for years. I mean, the old cliche of you come into this world alone and you go out alone, I think it's true, you know, and it says, I mean, I hate to quote the Bible, but it says, from dust we came and from dust we'll go. So, you know, you spend, you know, your life pretty much alone.
Next, John Mellencamp returns to discuss one of the most important albums of the 80s called Scarecrow. I'm Redbeard in the studio for Words and Music, the John Mellencamp Anthology, Part 1.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is John Mellencamp.
And I'm Redbeard. With the huge success of the song Pink Houses and then the Reagan-era themes on the follow-up album 1985 Scarecrow, John Mellencamp started to be saddled with this blue-collar spokesman tag.
And I'm sure a lot of people have this idea of, well, who I am and what I am. But usually it's not right. Usually it's really, really wrong. People think I'm a political person. Which one is the elephant? I don't know. Who's the donkey and who's the elephant? I don't even know that, you know. But I'll tell you, you know, and it's not just me. I was having a conversation. It sounds funny, but I was talking to Bob Dylan one day, and he looked at me and he goes, "Do you think I'm a political guy?" And I go, "Well, I wouldn't know, Bob. I mean, yeah, we're doing a song called Political World." He goes, "Yeah, but I'm not." You know, he says, "All my career, people have thought I was really involved in politics." He said, "I could give a shit, you know, could really care less." And it's not that I could care less. I have my opinion about politics. The funniest thing to me is that people think I'm the keeper of the small town. You know what I'm saying? Well, you really champion small towns and across America. And everybody thought that, you know, well, hell, this guy, you know, he's all about small towns. I'm not really. I wrote one song.
On a wooden cross, blackbird in the barn, 400 empty acres that used to be my farm. Grew up like my daddy did, my grandpa cleared this land. When I was 5, I walked a fence while grandpa held my hand. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. This land fed a nation, this land made me proud. Son, I'm just sorry there's no legacy for you now. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. Crops grew last summer, weren't enough to pay the loan. Couldn't buy the seed to plant this spring in the farmer's bank foreclosed. Call my old friend Shipman up to auction off the land. He said, "John, it's just my job, and I hope you understand. They calling it your job, oh horse, sure don't make it right. But if you want me to, I'll say a prayer for your soul tonight." Front porch with a Bible in her hand. Sometimes I hear her singing, "Take me to the promised land." You take away a man's dignity, you can't work his fields and cows. Blood on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. Blood on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. Planted in the cold ash yard, with 97 families who lost 97 farms. I think about my grandpa, my neighbors, and my name. It's a nice to feel like dying, like a scarecrow in the rain. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. This land fed a nation, yeah, this land made me proud. Son, I'm just sorry, there's just memories for you now. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow.
I'm not really about Rain on the Scarecrow either. I'm involved in Farm Aid and I support Willie Nelson. But for a while there, I had people calling me up asking me what I think about Congress, you know, Harkin's bill. And it's like, well, duh, I don't know, you know. So I'd have to go find out, you know what I'm saying? It was my responsibility to find out. Well, I put myself in that position. And last time I talked to you, life had really, for me, was like, this isn't fun anymore.
Right.
This is like, you know, maybe I should start kissing babies and run for office. And I really start taking myself too seriously.
She calls me home and she says, baby, it's a lonely old night. I don't know, I'm just so scared and lonely all at the same time. Nobody told us it was gonna work out this way. No, 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 no. Guess they knew we'd work it out in our own way. It's a lonely old night. Can I put my arms around you? It's a lonely old night. Custom made for two lonely people like me. Thinking about standing in the shadows of love, I guess it feels awfully alone. She says, I know exactly what he means. Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's a sad, 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 sad feeling when you're living on those in-betweens, but it's okay. It's a lonely old night.
Along with Willie Nelson and Neil Young, Mellencamp appeared at a benefit concert for family farmers dubbed Farm Aid. It was supposed to be a one-off fundraiser for farmers who had lost their livelihood. After he came off stage at Farm Aid No. 5, I reminded John Mellencamp of that sad fact. It was 1991. America had just been at war in Iraq, the country was in recession, and we had a president named Bush in the White House. Sound familiar?
Well, yeah, it is, and I said it from the stage. I mean, it's like the private sector is now paying the price for the Reagan years. And, you know, Farm Aid, really, I mean, as you can see, the first Farm Aid we did, we had maybe 100,000 people there. But it was the mid-'80s, and the private sector had money. And, you know, the government has raped the and pillaged the land. And so, consequently, what is it, like 40,000 people out there? And people just don't have the money for anything. They can't even make their own bills, and I think it's a shame. And this election is coming up. I mean, you know, I don't know who the hell. Who are you gonna vote for? I know who I'm not gonna vote for.
But, you know, they make it so damn hard for us to vote, Beard. Why can't we vote by telephone? If you could vote by telephone,
everybody
would vote. Okay, now that's the problem. If everybody voted, the middle class and the lower income people would be able to vote. They wouldn't have to be able to, like, you know, have to get off work. They just vote first thing in the morning and it's done. But then guess who wouldn't get elected? Those rich assholes, right, who have run, you know, as far as I can see, run a lot of this country. I mean, it's up to the highest bidder right now.
We're talking with John Mellencamp backstage after his performance at Farm Aid 5. There was a time in an interview not too long ago when you mentioned to me that you even had some questions about the Farm Aid movement, whether or not it was effective or whether maybe collectively we were pissing in the wind. Did you have some questions?
Well, I still have questions. You know, I mean, I know what Farm Aid does. I know what the money go for. It's turned into like a crisis center. It's still good, but like I said, you know, the problems have like gone beyond the farm crisis now. It's like in the streets. It is in the streets of America. And it's because, you know, I wrote a song called Country Gentleman. And it was about 10 years in politics. And I had a guy ask me, why did you write a song about Reagan after he's not in office anymore? I said, because we are not going to feel the effects of that guy until the mid-90s. And then we're going to pay for it.
Country gentleman walked a crooked mile, got a money in his pocket, did it all with a very handsome smile. Now he's living it up in a great big office. He ain't a gonna help no poor man. He ain't a gonna help no poor man. He ain't a gonna help no poor man. He just gonna help his rich friend. Gentlemen, we see them on TV, glad-handing folks and chatting to the nation. We never knew what really to believe, just a word upon slogan with emotional connection. And in the papers, all we'd ever read is so-and-so big shot signed his resignation. Now country gentleman, he wants us to believe that he's kind and honest with the best intention. He ain't a gonna help no poor man. He ain't a gonna help no children. He ain't a gonna help no women. He just gonna help his little bones and threw it in a stew. Thank God he went back to California.
He ain't a gonna help no poor man. He ain't a gonna help no children. He ain't a gonna help no women. He just gonna help his new friend.
This is Redbeard in the studio thanking John Mellencamp for insights into his Best of Part 1. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly, Redbeard. Transcription by Jane Carpenter. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is now produced by Barbarossa Limited. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. Be a part of the In the Studio Network. at www.inthestudio.net.